Mary spends a lot of time here, but her home group is Biscayne. And when she shares, there are a lot of times that I've heard her, and I came into to that meeting, and I'd be all out of sorts or something. And just to hear her talk soothes me, and I always hear something that is real special. So I'm sure that's going to be the case tonight. So let's please welcome Mary.
My name is Mary. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. My sobriety date is July 20th, 1987. I will make the drinking part pretty quick because we all got here the same way. But my first drink, I was 15 years old in my best friend Kelly Merritt's daddy's Chevrolet Impala. She had stole the beer Friday morning. It was still rolling around the trunk Friday night. We split it. And you know, it tastes like shit. I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it. It does. But it isn't about the taste. It was about being cool. It was about riding around Atlanta, Georgia. Drinking a beer with my girls. You know, it was about the radio blaring. And let's see, 15, that was 84. I'm sure Van Halen was blaring. We had made it. We'd arrived. We were cool. That was the magic for me. That was the magic for me. My parents did not drink. My grandmother was an absolute teetotaler. Neither of my parents were alcoholic. But I did grow up with an addiction in my home. My father had an addiction. And so I grew up in, all of us who grew up in homes that aren't real healthy understand the rules of that game. You can walk through the living room 10 times. And you walk through the living room the 11th time, just like you did the last 10 times, and all of a sudden, holy hell breaks loose, and you're still standing there going, I don't get it. What did I do? Why was it different this time? That sense of eggshells, you know? Like something's wrong, but I'm not sure what it is. I think all of us who grew up in dysfunction understand that. And we learn some really screwed up rules. We learn a lot of mixed messages. And we learn to play some games that are a little more advanced than we're ready to play, but we learn to play them for survival. If you read the big book, it talks about women alcoholics, and I very much qualify. For most women alcoholic and drug addicts, when we fall hard, we fall fast, we hit bottom. And I am very true to that. I apologize if this offends anyone. Drugs are part of my story. I won't rub it in, but it's part of the deal. And you asked to share what happened to me. First time I ever learned, between my junior and senior year in high school, I went to live with my brother for a summer. He lived in California. And he was married. His wife was in the military. So I flew to San Pedro for a couple months and hung out there. And two things happened. I fell in love with an airman. I was 17. I fell in love with this airman who's about 21, 22. We had this whole secret relationship. I understood secrets, so I totally knew how to do this. But there was one little problem. His commanding officer told her, found out that we were sort of dating, and it was very ugly scene. So basically it was break up with the little minor or we're going to steal your security clearance and it's going to be ugly. So we did. So my sister-in-law's cousin came to rescue me and took me back to her house where we drank peach schnapps and watched an officer and a gentleman And I learned to drink for comfort because my heart had been torn out. Uncle Sam was keeping me away from true love. You know, all that good stuff. And we cried and we drank and we cried and we drank. And it was just, I learned that magic. I had my first, I don't remember a lot of it, so I consider it a blackout. Let's put it that way. I had, after the airman had broken my heart, about a week later, I fell in love with a lifeguard. And we went to his house with a group and played quarters and proceeded to get hammered. And then he took me home. Well, if you've ever been on a military base and military housing, it all looks the same. Street after street after street after street. All the houses look the same. About 4 o'clock in the morning, they're going to take me home. We're standing outside this door, and I'm going, I don't think this looks right. I mean, I just don't think this looks right, y'all. I mean, I really don't think this looks right. We knock on the door, and this very large black man who is not very happy enters the door. I don't remember much after that. I think I just chose black out at that point, because it was definitely not my brother, nor my sister-in-law. And he was not happy. I went home. This is my senior year in high school. And I had a real problem about commitments and responsibilities, so I couldn't show up at school. So in an effort to try to keep me there, the assistant principal, who I had known real well, put me in the office. At least one period during the day, he knew I would be there because I had to. There was a magic stamp that had his name on it, and you stamp the passes, and these are like the sign-in, sign-out passes. Now, if I had listened in economic class, I would have learned I could have made a whole lot more money than I did, but I didn't know it at the time. I sold those passes for like 50 cents a buck, and I'm telling you, my half their hour there at the dance, God, just stamp and stamp and stamp and stamp. I mean, I could have sold those things like $5 at a... You live and you learn anything. Your entrepreneurial spirit takes time to develop. But there seemed to be this unexplainable rash of check-ins and check-outs. Like half the school would leave and nobody could explain how or why. But they all had a pass saying they could go, and it was not pretty. Essentially what happened, I was called in to the assistant principal and he said, you will either leave... You either transfer or we will start expulsion proceedings. In the meantime, I had discovered cocaine and I had discovered how to get high and drink all at the same time and find that wonderful balance. Wonderful balance. And I started in February. I mean, my slide was fast. I started using it in February. I was hanging around with a bunch of people about 10, 15 years older than I was. And by May, I was using about 1 to 3 grams a day. My mom said, okay, you think you're so smart and you think you know everything, so you can go be responsible for yourself because I'm done and I'm tired. Because I was number 4. So I moved over to Open Campus, moved in with my drug dealer boyfriend. I was 17, he was 27. And it was alcoholic addict heaven. I'm telling y'all. It was. He was a trust fund baby. And he had a house. His daddy paid all the bills. The only requirement was that he get a job. So he did. At the liquor store. It was beautiful. We didn't have a liquor cabinet. We had a liquor wall. Literally. From the top to the bottom. 3 and 4 bottles deep. And I'm telling y'all, I almost killed myself. Literally. But you know, there is a feeling that I can... I call it that Sunday afternoon feeling. You know, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, when you are absolutely turned inside out, and it is the most raw, desperate, awful feeling. That is one of the things that stands out in my mind. I have always remembered that. A beautiful summer Sunday. feeling like I was 100. And just that feeling. Essentially what happened is I had gotten, things had gotten so, progressed so rapidly in my drug addiction and alcoholism. The end came pretty quickly. And what happened for me was one night, you know how alcoholic love is some sick stuff. We either love each other or we hate each other. You know, it's like it's the two unhealthy people, two children, screwed up, trying to have a big people relationship. And, you know, communication and those kind of skills are just not something we have. So this one particular night, we had some argument about, God, I can't even tell you now what it was about. And it started in the bedroom, and he beat my ass from the bedroom all the way through the house, and he was pissed off. Now, take about 20 pounds off me now, and he was about 6'4", and had me by 100 pounds at least. But he had the weirdest habit. I'll never understand it, but it saved my life. He would get beer bottles and rinse them out, and then set them on the counter till he got about 10, and then he would throw them away. I never understood that. To this day, I've never had even one of y'all explain that to me. But it saved my life, so I ain't bitching. It got real, 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 real heated. And I'm standing over the back of the kitchen sink like this, and he's in my face. Just we're both high as kites and drunk as hell. And I reached behind me and grabbed one of the beer bottles and did this kind of Wonder Woman spin and snapped the bottle. I was holding onto the neck and snapped the bottle in the middle divider of the sink and took the neck of it and shoved it right there, this big old jagged edge right in his jugular. And I said, if you don't get off me, I will kill you, motherfucker. It surprised him enough that he backed up, which gave me enough leverage to get my butt and scoot off the sink, push him back, and head out the door very rapidly. Grabbed my purse, my keys, nothing else mattered, and split. That happened on a Friday night. That Saturday night, I was working cash control for Stone Mountain Park. The big, big, big director came in on like 5 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning to fire me. That's bad. And my 18th birthday was on that Sunday. I could not shake that feeling. I just thought, you know, when you already know, you have no idea what you're going to do. So I ended up moving back to my parents' house, which was, you know, the ultimate humiliation. That night, my dad and I happened to have the same exact birthday. Our birthday is July the 19th. So I was turning 18, he was turning 50. We had a giant family party, went steak and ale, all this cool stuff. Came back to the house, and I was headed out the door again, and my dad said, I have your keys. You're not going anywhere. We need to talk. Well, we sit down in the den. It's my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, my brother-in-law, just about everybody they can find to drag in there. My mother pulls this little pouch out, and she goes, would you like to tell me what this is? You know how moms are. And then she proceeds, well, of course I'm going to answer it the right way. I don't know. What is that? She unzips it and pulls out a mirror, a straw, a razor blade, a little bag with this much cocaine in it. So what's the most obvious answer you're going to ask when asked, is this yours? No, that's not mine. I've never seen that before. My mother was there and she's like, that is my little zip bag. Thank you very much. And if it's not, yeah, she had a lot of things to say about that. Basically, what happened is they said, you have, here's the deal. you want to get help, we'll get you help. If you don't want to get help, we're done. That's it. It's over. Now, my dad said, let me describe you what, if you choose not to get help, what happens. By Friday, you are gone. You will take with you what you purchase for yourself. If I purchase it for you, it's staying in that room. So basically, whatever clothes you purchase for yourself go with you. The rest of it stays. He said, as far as we're concerned, you are dead. That's it. Don't call. My mom had gone through her own little recovery. She's black belt codependent by this point in time. And she says, and I have called everybody in this country that you think will help you, your brother, your cousin, your niece, your aunt, this, that, that, and they won't do it. So you got a choice to make. Well, it's funny, my other brother that lived at home, and I walked around the neighborhood that night, and if any, he was ever made for any reason, it was that night. We just walked around, and he, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I was like, happy 18th birthday to me. This sucks, everybody hates me. But I intrinsically knew very down on the deep, on the inside, on the bottom, you know, that little voice that we do a lot of drinking over and using over and pushing around to not hear. It's like, you got, this is serious. You got to do something. So we met back the next night. I said I would get help. I went to a treatment center. Some of you will know it, some of you won't. It was a long time ago, but it's a place called Straight. And Straight was an extremely intense, hold you by the belt loop. You don't say jack shit to nobody without asking. You don't go to the bathroom by yourself. You don't turn around by yourself. Shut up, sit down, that's the deal. I tell this story because it's just funny. This is the way my parents sort of took this perspective. The first open meeting, we had them on Fridays and Mondays, and all the people in treatment sat on this side and all the parents sat on the other side. And when you were in treatment, you could not talk up till you got about 14 days. And then you could earn the right to talk to your parents for 5 minutes with somebody sitting there, and all you could say was, I'm sorry I did this, I'm sorry I did that, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But before you could earn that right, you were then stood up. You stood up in this open meeting. You stood up and your parents stood up and there was a microphone and they could talk to you, but you could not respond back to them. So my mom stands up and she does the whole mom thing. Like we're supposed to be. She's like, honey, I love you. You can do this. Just do what they say. I'm proud of you. Da-da-da. You know. My dad's like, I'm paying the bill. I hope you do something. And hands the microphone over. Thanks, Dad. Thanks. I left that treatment center. In the meantime, while I was in treatment, I lost my license for point suspension. See, I was 16 when I got it. I went in treatment at 18. I had 25 points accumulated in about 2 years. I won't tell that story. I would have had more, but I promised a certain Clarkson cop sexual favors if he wouldn't give me a ticket. He didn't take me up on it, but he let me go and follow me home. He said, I'm not going to write you a ticket just for having the balls to ask me that. Here's what happened. I left treatment. I left. I'd been sober 9 months. I had not, you had to earn your way up. And I'd been sober 9 months and I'd never been to a meeting. I'd never earned up to the place where you could go to outside meetings. I'd memorized the steps. I'd done their program. But I'd never been to a meeting and I left. because this crazy stuff happened with this newcomer girl, and I was fixing to be started all over again from day one. And my dad was just like, oh, no, hell no, we ain't doing this anymore. We're done. You want out? Now's your chance. Yeah, I love you, Dad. So I was terrified because you could not talk to the people you got sober with because you were a cop-out loser. You were going to die drunk. That's it. That was it. I was scared. Terrified. Because all my friends, remember, I was just 18. I was scared and I was mad and I was a whole lot of stuff all at the same time. So I made a phone call in the Yellow Pages to a number, Alcoholics Anonymous. And this very nice voice answered the phone. This very male, very nice voice answered the phone. Like, ooh, okay. So there's a meeting here at 8 o'clock tonight. I think I'll be going to a meeting. I said, myself. My dad dropped me off. It was the shortest but the longest walk I've ever made anywhere. I walked in the front door of the Biscayne Room, and I knew nobody. And it was before, and the thing about it was a Saturday night, and if you've ever been over there on Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I don't know if they still do. Do they still have off-the-wall resting? Saturday night at 8 o'clock was an off-the-wall meeting, and there was no topic, there was no nothing. People just talked about whatever, and I just was, okay. And when I walked in, there was two ladies and a man sitting in there, and obviously, I was trying to look cool, like, yeah, I know where I am, I've been here before, you know. And the lady was just kind of like, excuse me, can I help you? I thought, yes, please. She turned out to be my sponsor. Wonderful lady, Jan W. I don't remember much about my first meeting, but you know what? This I do remember. They said, keep coming back. And I heard things in that meeting that made sense to me. I mean, I didn't understand every time. I understood those steps because I'd memorized them in treatment. I knew what they were, but as far as how to live them or what they're about or what to do with them, it's like reading a poem and knowing what it says, but you have no idea what the meaning of it is. So I just did what they said, which is keep coming back. And the cool part about it is I'd lost my driver's license. And one Saturday, I had met this cute roofer, by the way. And he was going to pick me up. My dad dropped me off at the room. And I walked in the Biscayne Room, and there's this old guy sitting at the bar, only me and him. And I sit down, and he's reading the paper. And he looks dead up at me. I have never seen this man in my life. And he says, honey, this is a skin and an ass game. And I thought, this is the kind of guy that trapped me with this lunatic. My dad already left. He said, we are going to save your ass and teach you how to live in your skin. Guy's name was Bill Adams. I love that man. I came back. I just came to meetings. I showed up. I showed up, one, because y'all let me show up, and I didn't have any other friends. Another part is all the people that I went to high school with that were my friends were gone, and I was kind of pissed off about that because my best friend and I, before, while we were drinking, had gone up to UGA on one of those senior days, go pick your college, and there was the best-looking guy in this red Corvette, and that we, ugh. See, I was mad because all my friends are now at the University of Georgia in a red Corvette, and I am stuck with y'all at the Biscayne Room. Shoot me in the head, please. They're all about 150 years older than I am. And half of them about mean as snakes, and they just scare the shit out of me. I finally got up the courage to ask the lady Jan to be my sponsor. And, I mean, AA at that point was one way. And where you get sober is a lot of what you're founded on. I got sober with a lot of rock bottom, lived under bridge. Alcoholism was a fatal disease. Understand that. You will die from this disease. And if you don't understand that, go drink. We don't give a shit. Love you. If you want to stay, stay. So I went to Jan to ask her to be my sponsor, and I said, you know, would you be my sponsor? And she's like, yes. And I said, well, I said, can I get your number? So I got her number, and then I said, would you like my number? And she said, no. She said, I don't want what you have. Okay. What do you say to that? You know what I'm saying? She let me know very quickly what the terms of our deal were. What she said is, number one, see, this is the thing that gets me, and I just have to say this, I'm going to get on my soapbox for a minute. When I got sober, and where I got sober, this whole thing about going through the book with your sponsor, we never heard that. My sponsor said, can you read? I said, well, I did graduate from college, from high school at least. She said, good, here's a book, read it. If you have questions, call me. Read the stories. If you can't find anything in there, because the first 164 pages of the book were just a little bit too much, but I read the stories first. I found the things in the story that was like me. I understood that. So I read the stories first, and then I read the book. And she said, now, if you have questions about that book, there's something called Big Book Meetings. Go to them. Because if I read you the book, you're going to get Dan Worthington's version of the big book, which just might be as skewed as yours is. Go to big book meetings. That way you've got 50 alcoholics sitting in the room that can share their collective experience of that paragraph or that step or what happened. If you want to do step work, read the step. And they have things called step meetings. Go. Listen. Your sobriety is your responsibility. And if it's shitty, it ain't my fault. Jan was sponsored by Maggie Harrison, who started the room. And Maggie talked all the time about, do you want good, better, or best sobriety? If you want shitty sobriety, go right ahead. If you want best sobriety, get in the book, go to meetings, get involved. I did that. And I will share this with you guys. I took on one of the most thankless jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is I was responsible to do the food for dances at the Biscayne Room. If you ever decide to be the entertainment chair or food for dances, be ready. It is a thankless job because every alcoholic in there has got an idea about why y'all could have better food or a different choice, or why didn't y'all have this or why didn't you have that? And the Biscayne Room gave you like $100, and this was a long time ago, $100 budget to feed 250 alcoholics who've been dancing for 3 hours. And you're supposed to pull some kind of magic rabbit out of your head and make all these people happy. In that process, what happened was, well, one dance one summer night, about 11:30, the tables are empty, the drunks are bitching, we still got an hour and a half left to go, and I'm trying to figure out how to make this happen. And this marvelous man in a suit and a tie showed up with a ham. I got a ham, and eventually I got a husband out of the deal, too. But I'll tell you something. I'm ever so grateful I landed in the rooms when I landed in the rooms, and I'm grateful that I married the man that I married because I was taught how to do AA the old school way. I'm so sorry that our culture has gotten to be so scared to try anything or risk anything, because I've had my opportunity to sit at the Biscayne Room. Used to could sit for 3 days and stay with a drunk, a wet one. Nothing will so ensure your sobriety like doing that. Nothing. The one that stands out to me, and I'll share this at the end, and then I'll kind of move on, was this was back in the 80s, long before, you know, camo girls were cool. It was this chick showed up drunk as a skunk in full camo. About 300 pounds, pissed off, and that she wanted some help. So me, in the suburb, the deal was you had to commit, if you remember the room, you had to commit that you were going to spend the night and you were going to make sure their time got covered. The rule was two people stayed, never one. That was for everybody's safety. So she's laying there at one point on the bed, just, what do you think you know, you skinny little bitch? Well, you ain't never fucking up. What the hell you think you're going to tell me? About 45 minutes later, she's sitting on the john in the bathroom going, I love you. I love you. Nobody's ever taken care of me like this before. I love you. You stay up all night long listening to that, and you will go home going, thank you, God. Whatever little piddly problem I have, whatever the hell's wrong with me, I love my family, I love everybody, I love the earth, I love society. I'm telling you, you will go home grateful. You will. We don't get to do that anymore, and God, I can't tell you how sorry I am about that. Anyway, life got a lot closer to normal. I got married. I got a stepson in the deal. Jerry was several years. He was 22 years older than I was and 11 years sober longer than I was. And he did it the old AA way, and we did it the old AA way. And my children today will tell you, this is when they're a little bitty, I have distinct memories of, I can't tell you how many pancakes I've cooked at 3 o'clock in the morning with some drunk sitting at my kitchen table. I had no idea who he was, seen him once. We brought him home. They slept on the couch. They hung with you for a while. I have this distinct memory of this guy, I can't even remember his name, sitting on the couch. He'd slept on the couch, and he's still kind of dirty, and he is just, you know, I brought him some coffee, and he's sitting on the couch, kind of leaning with a pillow, like this, staring at cartoons, and my three-year-old sitting on the couch next to him in his little pajamas, and they were about on the same level. I wish I could remember who that particular drunk was, but I can't. We had, and the God of my understanding has been very good to me. At 5 years sober, I brought my first one into this world. I had a son. 22 months later, I brought number two into the world. Had another son. About 3 years later, I brought my little girl into the world. Now, you have to know, because this was miraculous on my part. See, Jerry, I told you guys there was an age difference between us, and Jerry said, we're going to have all the kids we're going to have by the time I'm 50. My daughter was born 6 days after his 50th birthday. So I like piling them in just as fast as I can, spitting them out, quick, because cut off was coming. That's the truth. And after that, life got kind of hard. This program is a wonderful place, and there's a lot of tools, but there is no guarantee that life is going to be wonderful or beautiful, or you're going to get everything that you want. What it gives you are the tools to get through it. And I am going to say this tonight. I thought about it, but I'm going to say it anyway. And if y'all don't like it, y'all got a sponsor, call you her, and get all resentful about it. Depression is as serious a disorder as alcoholism is. Take it seriously. Take it seriously. I watched my husband, who'd been sober for a long time, suffer for some very serious chronic depression that in the end led to a divorce. And in 2005, Jerry was diagnosed with inoperable lung cancer. And about 5 days after he was diagnosed, he passed away. If he had done what we do and gotten the help he needed with depression and gone to the doctor in the right amount of time, he would probably be alive today. But depression is as scary and as powerful as alcoholism. And don't, if you're a newcomer in this program, I'm going to tell you something right now. I can pull my soapbox back out. Do not walk in these rooms and let some AA who has no idea what the hell he's talking about tell you to stop taking antidepressants or stop doing this or stop doing that. Because you know what? Until they have DR period in front of their name, they don't know shit. That's the bottom line to it. If you don't have a doctor, get one. Okay. This program encourages us, get outside help. Get outside help. Do it. I spent $10,000 on therapy. Thank you very much. I've done my couch time. I've also taken advantage of the tools that this program has given me. And I will share something with y'all. Life has been beautiful. Life has been horrible. Life has been wonderful. Life has been hard. I've been given the tools to deal with any situation, no matter how hard I thought it was. I've had to look at three little faces and say four words that I knew would change their lives forever. Daddy died this morning. But I stayed sober through it. And we're okay. We're doing what we need to do. The point is this. I didn't get promised anything magical when I got here. What I was promised was a chance to play. That's what I was promised. Depending upon how much work I put into it and how much effort I put into it, that's what I was promised, was just a chance to play. I've been given a support system and a group of people that, you know, there is no gang in the world that will hang with you like a bunch of drunks from Alcoholics Anonymous when your train gets derailed. My 17-year-old, two Thanksgivings ago, I got a phone call and he had been hit by a train. I stood out in the hall of Grady Hospital by myself, scared to death. But you know the most amazing thing about it? He's okay. He's walking and talking. But I made one phone call before I hit that emergency room, and the doctor sent me home about 2 hours later. By the time I walked out of the emergency room at Grady Hospital, I had 25 missed calls on my phone, voicemails. AA. We got you. You need something. We're praying. Whatever you need. You want me to come down there? You want me to stand with you? Whatever. I'm telling you. That is what I've walked out of this deal with. But it doesn't come. There's a lot of work that comes with it. And, you know, I don't get all the credit. I have done the work. God has definitely a whole lot more than filled in the cracks. He has driven the train. But I've had to do some work in this program. I've had to look at me. I've had to work on me. I can't work on you. I've had to work on me. I've had to unzip this and get in there and understand what's wrong with me, because you know what? There's something wrong with me. I still go to meetings today, and I'm going to tell y'all, honestly, I believe today I need meetings more today than I did when I got here. It's not because I'm going to drink. Oh, God, I'm going to drink. It isn't about that. It's been a long, long time since I thought about drinking. I couldn't tell you the last time. But I promise you, I can look like that chick on the Exorcist. Now, my head's spinning around, spitting out green stuff. I got three kids terrified in the corner, like, oh, she's losing it. That's how this is over. She's lost. You know? Because that isn't them, that's me. I warned them before I quit smoking. I said, I'm telling you, I'm giving you a week. It's going to be an easy ride this week, but next week, y'all better stay out the way. They hung with me. I can't tell you the day that we buried Jerry, and I took him to Florida with a bunch of other AAs, met us down there at the beach, and we just hung for a couple days. I got up that morning, we do this every September, and I got up that morning to make morning meditation. Y'all, it's cool as hell. There's nothing like about 8 AAs, and y'all in your pajamas, you just rolling down with your coffee and your meditation book, and you sit down and you read your little meditation together, and the beach is blowing, and this is like, whew, I hope this is what heaven looks like. I walked in that group, y'all, ready, terrified. I had a little paper that said, I'm scared. Holy shit. I had three kids to raise by myself. I mean by myself. And they just all looked at me and said, sit down, get some coffee, get your meditation book out. You're going to do exactly what you did yesterday and the day before that and the day before that and the day before that. And you're going to do that tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. You're okay. Y'all sure? Y'all be promise? You sure? You promise? Y'all would like to be with you. No, you can be all right. And hopefully, I shared with you what I grew up in and what you guys grew up in, which is some dysfunction and the rules of dysfunctional games. It is amazing what my sobriety, just me showing up at these meetings, has changed a lot of other lives. And I'll share this with you. This is one of my most precious moments, and then I will shut up. A couple years ago, my 17-year-old had dated this girl. She was 15 then. He fell in love with this little girl. They dated the whole way through school, and then she had to move, and his heart was broke bad. And I just kept checking on him, and he was like, I'm fine. And one Friday night, I just happened to catch him the right way, and I said, are you okay? He sat down at the kitchen table with me, and he just cried. He just opened up on the inside and just cried like a baby. And I cried right along with him. Honey, come here. You know what, at 15 years old, I would have no more damn sat down with my parents and said, my heart is perfect, oh, little Johnny, don't let him move, and now I'm crushed. And I would have no more happened. I got the chance to establish a relationship and a communication with my children that's been based on this program and what I learned here. And to take these tools home and deal with my family and my mother and my dad and my babies. My sobriety is a lot more important than just me. There's a lot of other people who ride on it. So, yeah, I come to meetings today. It's important. It's important. Because I heard when I got sober that if I came here and I did what y'all said, that I could expect to be reasonably and usefully whole. That is what I want to be. Usefully whole. To be a part of. You guys have given that to me. Thank you for letting me share with you.
Thank you, Mary. I bet you saved some asses tonight. And speaking for myself, you helped me be a little more comfortable in my own skin. I do appreciate that. Hey, our seventh tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. declining outside contributions, your generous donations support this group and AA its own. And I've asked Kia to give out the chips.
Hey everybody, I'm Kia and I'm an alcoholic. And here at NABA we have a chip system to mark our time in sobriety. And we offer the white chip if you want to surrender and try our way of life just for today. Anybody want to pick up a white chip? Anybody else want to pick up a white chip? All right. We have silver for 30 days. Anybody celebrating 30 days in a row? All right. We have red for 90 days. Anybody celebrating 90 days? We have yellow for 6 months. Anybody celebrating 6 months? We have green for 9 months. Anybody celebrating 9 months? We have blue for 1 year, multiple thereof. Anybody celebrating a birthday? Anybody want to reconsider on the white chip? All right, thank your higher power for the chip.
We're going to keep this white chip right here, just in case somebody wants to reconsider. Okay, we can make some AA-related announcements. The floor is open. Hey, Lisa.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Thank you.
Lisa, I don't want to stand up.
That's all right.
Good luck. I'm an alcoholic, too. And we're having a dance this Saturday, Valentine's dance. You don't need to have a sweetheart. Bring your ass in here. 9:30 to 12. Food, DJ, fun, and it'll be a lot of fun. So...
this Saturday night, Valentine's Day dance, right after the 8 o'clock 12 step. Okay. All right. It's going to be fun. Lisa does a heck of a job. Sometimes she probably experiences something that Mary described.
But
a little bit. Come
and
support Lisa. Anybody else? ICAPA invites you to attend 51st International Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous, Sunday, March 22nd, at 12 to 4 at Murphy Candler Park. Barbecue, kickball, picnic, roll-a-thon. How about that? And I don't think they're drinking there or anything. More than likely not. Next week, we have Barbara T. telling her story. Her sobriety date's May 22nd, 2003. She comes frequently to the How It Works group and also is a member of the Coming group. So that'll be another dynamic female to follow tonight's speaker. And then on February 22nd, Rusty Jones. 28 years. We'll see how much his story changed since 2 years ago. Okay. Any others? All right. Well, let me remind you that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Sober today.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done,
on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back as the verse is working.
Thank you.